Well, it's official. We already knew that Oklahoma and Texas were coming to the SEC, but now we know when. It's going to be July of 2024, meaning not this upcoming football season, but next football season in the SEC. 16 teams and no divisions likely. A whole lot on that, the impending move, what went down, plus what we should expect the SEC to look like, especially for Tennessee. That and a whole lot more here on your Monday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols, and I'm your host, Eric Kane. So glad that you guys elected to hang out with me here today and watch us on YouTube by subscribing to that channel and following us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. It is part of the Locked On Podcast Network that is your team every single day. And today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you want to talk to faster and for free. Go ahead and post your job for free. That's at linkedin.com/lockedoncollege. Terms and conditions do apply. We got a busy, busy Monday show here. I'm going to show you my notes right here on my notepad. Look at all these notes right here if you're watching on YouTube. Look at all these notes right here. Look at all these notes right here. We got tons and tons to get into. I love these type of shows because, you know, not going to lie to you, you guys probably know this as well. I mean, when you get into the offseason, especially for the football offseason, you know, content creating can get difficult at times, right? So when you have news, especially big news like this, it just kind of gets you really, really excited. That adrenaline gets pumping. And, you know, would have talked about this on Friday, but the news came out later on Thursday night, and I'd already recorded a Friday episode, and, you know, quite frankly, I didn't have the time to go back and re-record. So figured you guys would still want to hear my takes on all of this, the SEC, Oklahoma, and Texas here on a Monday. That, what scheduling model do you want to see, and which permanent opponents do you want to see for Tennessee? That's the question of the day as well. Who do you want to see Tennessee's three permanent football opponents in the 6-3 SEC scheduling model? Who do you want those to be? Who do you want as Tennessee's three permanent football opponents in the 6-3 SEC scheduling model? That is the question of the day, and we're going to discuss that here in a little bit in segment two. And then, of course, in segment three, Tennessee basketball, man. What a rough stretch. I mean, really a rough stretch. Needed so many things to go right for that comeback. You got that comeback. Missouri needed like five things to happen for them to get that shot off. It happened, and lo and behold, they lose at the buzzer again. All that and more here on a Monday show. Okay, so Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated's been all over this story from the get-go. Ross Dellinger's a really, really good reporter, really good at his job. He tweeted on a Thursday night later in the evening. He said, hey, the Big 12 and its TV partners have reached an early exit agreement with Texas and Oklahoma, sources tell SI Now. The schools will owe the league a combined $100 million in exit fees, sources say. They will begin play in the SEC in 2024. So what that means is negotiations between the schools, Texas and Oklahoma, the Big 12 and its TV partners, primarily Fox. Of course, ESPN does do some of those games, but Fox would have the most to lose in this scenario because the ESPN, starting in 2024, will be the sole broadcasting partner for the Southeastern Conference. They reached a deal for 2024 in terms of an exit fee. In July of 2024, that's when they'll begin SEC and they'll play football in the SEC in 2024. They will become member institutions in the SEC by July of 2024. Texas and Oklahoma owe a combined $100 million to the conference. It's going to be about $50 million each. Before this negotiation, the last round of negotiations, it was going to be about $75 million apiece for each school. But this cuts it down by $25 million to $50. So a combined $100 million to the conference. And in turn, the conference is going to, you know, much of that that exit fee, that $100 million, is going to go to the eight Big 12 legacy schools to offset the decrease in the 2024 value. So the 2024 revenue split for the conference shares by losing Texas and Oklahoma, that's going to go down. So a lot of this $100 million exit fee from these two schools are going to go to offset that decrease of the eight legacy schools. Also, part of that's going to go to Fox. Fox is expected to receive additional inventory or compensation moving forward for 2024 and beyond, because again, between Fox and ESPN, who both broadcast some of the Big 12 right now, Fox has the most to lose because again, ESPN is going to be the sole broadcasting partner of the SEC beginning in 2024. Greg Sankey chimed in on it. He put out a statement Thursday night saying, quote, The Southeastern Conference learned today of the decision by the Big 12 Conference to alter the membership exit date for the University of Oklahoma and the University of Texas. We are continuing our preparation for this membership transition, and we look forward to welcoming the conference's new members and moving into the future as a 16-team league. The presidents and chancellors of the SEC previously voted with unanimous approval to accept the application of Oklahoma and Texas to join the conference on July 1st, 2025, and have now authorized the conference office to proceed with facilitating the transition of Oklahoma and Texas to become full members of the Southeastern Conference on July 1st, 2024. That was Greg Sankey on Thursday night. So look at this, man. We knew this was going to be a great possibility. We knew, at least in my mind, I knew that like the Big 12 had to get something, right? If you're going to wait until their deal expires in 2025, then you're not going to get anything, right? So why not negotiate, get some money before they leave, and kind of take care of yourself as well? Now, 2024, that football season, the Big 12 is already expanding, right? They've got Houston coming in. They've got Cincinnati. They've got some other schools that they are expanding on. So they're going to play that entire football season with Texas and Oklahoma, or 2023, excuse me, pardon me. So it's going to be a kind of a bigger conference there. And then you're going to lose your two flagships, Oklahoma and Texas, following the 2023 academic year. And you're going to get them in there before football of 2024. So 2024 is shaping up to be a monstrous year in college athletics. So in 2024, the SEC will expand to 16 teams. The Big 12 will expand, or the Big 10, excuse me, is adding USC and UCLA. The college football playoffs is going from 4 teams to 12 teams, and ESPN will begin the sole TV partnership with the SEC. All that is happening in 2024. Again, in 2024, there will be 16 teams in the SEC. The Big Ten adds UCLA and USC, moving it to 12 teams. Improving the conference, rather. I always forget how many teams are in there. Like, the Big 12 didn't have, like, 10 teams. The Big Ten have 12 teams. It gets confusing with it not written out in front of you. The college football playoffs expand from 4 teams to 12 teams, and then ESPN becomes the exclusive broadcasting partner with the Southeastern Conference. 2024 is going to be a big year. And again, a lot of people listening, a lot of people watching, a lot of people following the story for, you know, months and months and months are saying, who cares? Why do you want mega conferences? Why do you want this? Is this the end of the NCAA? You know, yada, yada, yada. You're disrupting old rivalries. You're disrupting just the beautiful, you know, playing of the game and all that. Well, as we know, it always comes down to dollars and cents. Always comes down to it. For example, the expected revenue share in the SEC once Texas and Oklahoma get in there, and they're not going to get as much in the first year beginning because, again, 2024 will be prorated because they're coming in for the back half of that year. But once all the dust settles and everything, when there's 16 teams in the conference, the expected revenue share for each member institution from the SEC is $70 million. Okay, for the fiscal year of 2021-2022, the revenue share for the 14 teams that are currently in the SEC was $49.9 million. So you're going up at least, you know, $25 million, or almost $25 million, or almost $21 million. It's pretty incredible here when you kind of think about it, right? And last year when the SEC had a little bit more money, the revenue share was $54.6 million. So you're getting a bump up here. And, of course, all that has to do with, you know, top 25 finishes and all that time, championships in different sports, how many teams from the SEC are in the college football playoffs. So the expected revenue share is going to be about $70 million compared to what it was this past year in the SEC, $49.9 million. That is why this is happening. Dollar signs, cents, they make the world go round, right? And this is no different. It makes too much sense to not do it. And think about this. I mean, if you're Northwestern or the Big Ten, I mean, adding on USC and UCLA, you're about to get paid, right? If you're USC or UCLA, UCLA was averaging, I think, $29 million or $24 million in terms of revenue share from the Pac-12. And you're going to jump that up to probably 50-something by joining the Big Ten. It's a no-brainer. It's an absolute no-brainer. If you're a Vanderbilt here in the SEC that's not really pulling your own weight in the big revenue-type sports, you're just like, hey, thanks, I'm going to collect that check, going to collect that check, going to collect that check, and still not make sports a priority on that university's campus. You know, dishing out and getting rid of the athletic communications department pretty much. It's abysmal over there at West High, if you want to call it that. So anyway, that was the big news Thursday night. Tennessee is going to have two more members of the SEC. Come July of 2024, the SEC is moving from 14 teams to 16 teams as Oklahoma and Texas have negotiated with the Big 12 and its TV partner Fox for an early exit to leave the conference and then come on and play SEC football in 2024. What's this mean for Tennessee, for the other SEC schools, and for the conference as a whole when these two teams join for football? We've discussed some scheduling models. We're going to discuss it again and who you want to see as Tennessee's permanent opponents. That is coming up next right here on Locked On Vols. But first, guys, I want to remind you about our proud sponsors, LinkedIn. They do a fantastic job and love having them aboard here with the Locked On Network. As small business owners or hiring managers, you know success in 2023. It all depends on the team members you surround yourself with. That's why you got to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs, you can hire qualified candidates more efficiently by matching open roles of people who have those skills, values, and experiences to help you achieve your goals. LinkedIn Jobs helps you quickly attract qualified candidates to the job openings with targeting tools. They go beyond the resume data by using insights from the job post, company, and their 875 million member profiles to put your post in front of the most qualified candidates available. Identify with the most qualified candidates on LinkedIn.com. And you can connect with them fast and for free. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to screen and rate applicants based on job qualifications all on one platform. It's why small businesses rank LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering qualified hires versus the leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs lets you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster and for free. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnCollege. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnCollege. Post your job for free. Terms and conditions, they do apply. Hey, everybody. Welcome back into it. Your Monday edition of Locked On Vols. Appreciate you guys for hanging out with us here today. Tomorrow is Mailbag Show, Twitter Tuesday. Any questions, any comments you guys have on Tennessee football, recruiting, basketball? Tennessee baseball starts up this weekend. Friday night is opening night from Phoenix, Arizona. Can't wait for that. Send them in at _Caner and at Locked On Vols. As always, we'll take your questions there and we'll answer them on tomorrow's show. Question of the day, and that leads us into our next topic here on a Monday. Who do you want as Tennessee's three permanent football opponents in the 6-3 SEC scheduling model? Okay, so with Texas and Oklahoma coming to the Southeastern Conference, we knew that the schedule was going to change and likely the model was going to change. None of this is definite right now, but this is kind of all the talk, all the reports, and kind of in the direction that this is headed. Starting in 2024, again, this is not official, but there's likely to be no divisions in Southeastern Conference football. There's going to be no East. There's going to be no West. You're going to scrap the divisions. Likely, what we're leaning towards now is a 9-game conference schedule, but that's not definite. So the two options here with no divisions is going to be a 1-7 model, okay, or a 3-6 model, okay? The 1-7 model would be 8 conference games, which is, you know, eight conference games, and then no divisions, one permanent opponent, and 7 rotating opponents, meaning you would play one team every single year. So in Tennessee's case, it would likely be Vanderbilt. Tennessee would play Vanderbilt every single year, no matter what, and it would rotate all the other 14 teams from the Southeastern Conference. You play them once every 2 years, okay? Now, in the 3-6 scheduling model, this would go up to 9 conference games, which, again, is more likely because if you're the biggest conference in the world, if you're 16 teams and you boast your chest and stick it out there and talk about how good you are and all the money you're making, then why are you not playing another conference game like the Big Ten is? Why? Why? Okay? Plus, there's more money to be had, right? So, again, this is likely going to be the 3-6 model or the 6-3 model, whichever way you want to spin that, which is 9 conference games, no divisions, 3 permanent opponents, and 6 rotating opponents, all right? So, you know, that's essentially, you have 3 permanent opponents. So for Tennessee's case, you know, for sake of argument right now, we'll say Vanderbilt, Alabama, Kentucky, and then you will rotate with 6 opponents every 2 years, meaning you would play the other teams in the SEC once every 2 years. Same with the 7-1 model. One permanent opponent, the other conference games on your schedule to make 8 would be 7, but you would play one team from the SEC every single year. And by the time if you come in and spend 4 years at college, then you will have played one game in every single SEC football schedule, which is, or every single football stadium, which is pretty neat. And I think that's truly what college football is all about. So, you know, when's all this going to be finalized? When are we going to know exactly, are there divisions? Are there not divisions? Are there 8 conference games? Are there not? Are there 9 conference games? Well, Greg Sankey joined the ESPN radio, I believe it was Friday morning, and pretty much said, hey, this isn't definite, but the SEC spring meetings, which is in Destin, Florida, and that's typically on Memorial Day weekend, is kind of the timeline for when they want to kind of have a direction moving forward. That way they can start turning out schedules and get ready for the 2024 season ahead of the 2023 kickoff. So by the SEC spring meetings in Destin, Florida on Memorial Day weekend, we hope to know officially, is it going to be 8 games with a 7-1? Is it going to be 9 games with a 6-3? Kind of which direction you're going to go in. So again, all the talk, all the reports, all the vibes is going to be, is kind of in the direction of a 9-game conference schedule, okay? Which means that is the 6-3 model, okay? Which means Tennessee will have 3 permanent opponents and then a rotation of the other 6 each year. So they play every team in the SEC twice, or every other year, I mean. So if that is the case, who do you want Tennessee's 3 permanent opponents to be? Well, everybody's kind of giving their take. I'm going to give you my 3. I'm not doing the whole schedule because, quite frankly, I don't have enough time to do the cobwebs and let's try to, you know, make this work, just like the Always Sunny in Philadelphia scene and that meme that's out there. I don't have time to do that, nor am I smart enough to do that. But for Tennessee's sake, this is what it needs to be. Number one, we know for a fact, okay, if Tennessee was going to the 1-7 model, if the SEC was going to the 1-7 model, Tennessee would stay playing Vanderbilt. It's an in-state opponent. Tennessee's played Vanderbilt for over 100 years. That would happen. So it's only likely that in the 6-3 model, Tennessee would play Vanderbilt every year. So Vanderbilt's one. The second one would be Alabama. Historical opponents, you play them every single year. Third Saturday in October, that's not going to go anywhere. Now, if it was the, you know, 7-1 model, the 1-7 model, whatever, again, you flip those numbers around, whatever, it's the same damn thing. You know, Alabama would likely keep Auburn, right? I mean, Alabama would probably keep Auburn for the Iron Bowl. There's so many different rivalries in the SEC, but Alabama would probably keep Auburn, you know, or the SEC would probably keep the Iron Bowl alive. But in the 6-3 model, Tennessee would have Vanderbilt, Tennessee would have Alabama, because that makes sense. The third team is the one that's always up in the air. In my opinion, it should be Kentucky, the Border Bowl, right? The Battle of the Beer Barrel that hasn't been won in 25 years or whatever. Tennessee, again, has played Kentucky, you know, for 80-plus years or 90-plus years, right? I mean, Tennessee has played Kentucky every single year. That game means something. It is a rivalry. It is a Border Bowl. Geographically, it makes sense. Rivalry, it makes sense. And competitiveness, it really makes sense. You know, where Kentucky is now compared to where it was. So those would be my 3. I grew up in the demo in the era where Tennessee and Florida were big time rivals. I recognize Florida as a big time rival for the University of Tennessee. I do. I recognize Florida's had much more success than Tennessee in this rivalry. But you know, Florida, you know, third Saturday in September, if you want to call it that, or third game of the year, fourth game of the year, whatever. Typically, you know, that's a big time game, and that was the rivalry game for kids my age, right? For Tennessee that grew up watching Tennessee football, it's Tennessee and Florida. But, you know, prior to the divisions coming in 91 or whenever it was, Tennessee and Florida didn't play each other. So historically, Tennessee and Florida really aren't that big rivals, and I understand that. But Vanderbilt, Tennessee are. Alabama and Tennessee are. Kentucky and Tennessee are for sure. So I'm sure you've seen over the weekend, everybody's pretty much making their pitch and saying, you know, this is the 3 permanent opponents for each and every team, according to me. Or, you know, this is what I think it'll be. This is what would make sense for me. Let's go to Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. He's the one that continues to break the news and has been all over this subject. He said, hey, this is how I took a jab at it. All right. 3 permanent opponents for each team based on number 1, rivalries. Number 2, geography, and number 3, equity. He said, let the bickering begin. For Tennessee, Ross Dellinger has Vanderbilt, Alabama, and South Carolina. Boy, would everybody here hate Tennessee playing South Carolina every single year? That means nothing. That is not a rivalry game for the University of Tennessee. You could play Florida every year. You could play Kentucky every single year. You could play Georgia every single year. All those teams before you even consider South Carolina. Like, why? Why would you want to play South Carolina? Again, you got to make some things work here. But according to Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, this is how he would do it. And again, he knows this is not final. This is just his attempt. Tennessee would play Vanderbilt, Alabama, and South Carolina as the three permanent opponents. He would have Vanderbilt playing Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Missouri. He would have Auburn playing Alabama, Georgia, and South Carolina. He would have Alabama playing Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU. That is quite the challenge, if you ask me, especially the way Tennessee's playing right now. Goodness gracious. So South Carolina would play Florida, Auburn, and Tennessee. That's pretty rough as well. Let's go and find a team that's kind of a bottom dweller typically. Mississippi State would play Ole Miss, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. Texas would play Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Arkansas. Oklahoma would play Texas, Missouri, and Florida. So it's kind of interesting there. This is G. Allen Taylor from The Athletic. He took a jab at it, and his three permanent opponents for Tennessee would be Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, which makes no sense. Again, why on earth are you not having Tennessee and Vanderbilt play football every single year? Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. I can promise you this right now, and if I'm wrong, I'll quit being the host here at Locked On Vols. Nobody saved this because, again, if Star Wars taught us anything, you never deal in absolutes. That's what Siths do. But I'll say it right now. If Tennessee doesn't play Vanderbilt in one of these models every single year, I'll quit my job because that's how confident I am. Tennessee and Vanderbilt will play every single year. So this model is quite silly. And again, I'm not making a model because it's a lot of hard work and people would ridicule mine like I'm ridiculing this one. But again, this is from G. Allen Taylor of The Athletic. And he's got Tennessee's three permanent opponents, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. Makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. For the sake of conversation, Vanderbilt, he has Kentucky, South Carolina, and Ole Miss. Alabama's would be Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU. I mean, that's a pretty likely one, if you ask me. There's a lot of people that are saying that one. So anyway, that's kind of what we're at right now. So there's going to be one. Somebody's going to be PO'd. Some school's going to think they have it out to get them, the SEC. It is what it is. But I think the one that makes the most sense in terms of geography, in terms of rivalry, in terms of equality, would be Tennessee playing Vanderbilt, Alabama. Could you get the, you know, Vanderbilt sucks, Alabama's great. So, you know, and historically, Alabama's had much more success than Vanderbilt. And Nick Saban's not going to coach at Alabama every single year. I recognize that. But again, that's why you take into account the rivalries. Vanderbilt's, Alabama, and then Kentucky, who you played every year since, goodness gracious, they were horse-drawn carriages, right? That's what I would do. What say you, in the 6-3 SEC scheduling model, who would you want Tennessee's three permanent opponents to be? My answer is Vanderbilt, Alabama, and Kentucky. Do we have any Vanderbilt, Alabama's, Florida's out there? Do we have any Vanderbilt, Alabama's, Georgia's out there? Do we have anybody that's leaving off Vanderbilt or Alabama? I'd love to hear your arguments. I'd love to hear your comments. @_Kaner and @LockedOnBalls. Put a little hashtag Twitter Tuesday for tomorrow's mailbag show. All right, coming up next, we got to talk about it. Tennessee basketball. Yikes! Over the weekend, that was not great. But first, let me tell you about our friends over at Built Bar. Looking for a delicious treat, but don't want all the fat and calories? Then you got to try a Built Bar. We just got through the holidays, and I know that your goal likely is to eat a little healthier this year. If you are like a lot of others, want to eat healthier, but don't want to compromise those tastes, man, I've got the thing for you. You got to try Built. With Built, healthy is actually tasty. Seriously, they're so delicious, you won't think that they're good for you. They're perfect for that New Year's resolution. What makes Built Bar so good? Well, for starters, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. That's right, I said real chocolate. And they come in unbelievable flavors like churro, peanut butter, and coconut almond. I'm not sure how Built does it, but these bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining these amazing things for you. What's even better is they're healthy, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and a whopping 17 grams of protein. And now you don't have to wait around for the box. For years, I've been telling you to get these at Built.com. You can still do that. But now, all you need to do is go to your local Walmart or your Sam's Club distributor. That's right. Head to the nearest Walmart today. Walk into the pharmacy section. Grab a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate, and coconut puffs. Or you can go to your local Sam's Club. Run in and grab a 13-bar box with hit flavors like brownie batter and churro. You can thank me later. So check it out at Built.com or now at your local Sam's Club or Walmart. All right, guys, we got a final segment here on this Monday show. Don't forget Twitter Tuesday, mailbag edition of the show. That's coming up tomorrow @_Kaner and @LockedOnVols. Our last segment, inspire the question of the day here on Locked On Vols. Who do you want as Tennessee's three permanent football opponents in the 6-3 SEC scheduling model? Texas, Oklahoma entering the SEC and will play football in the fall of 2024. That is exciting. But what's that mean for Tennessee and the other SEC teams moving forward? We've talked about that today. But now we're going to shift gears. We're going to go to the hardwood where Tennessee has fallen 86-85 to Missouri. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Rough sledding. It's been a rough week for Tennessee basketball. There's no doubt about it. Back-to-back losses at the buzzer. That's devastating, right? Tennessee now falls to 19-6, 8-4 in the Southeastern Conference. Missouri, 19-6 as well, 7-5 in the Southeastern Conference. What makes this so frustrating is that Tennessee was getting its the shit beat out of it. I mean, let's be honest. Tennessee was getting its tail whipped. Trailed by 17 points in the second half. 17 points in the second half where Missouri led 49-32, a little over 13 minutes left in that game, I believe is when that score was, right? And Tennessee battled back. Got great play from Tyreek Key, who played 23 minutes off the bench, shot 6 of 13 from the field, made 5 three-pointers, a career high for Tennessee in 23 points, played 31 minutes. That's a season high as well. He had 6 rebounds. He had 2 assists. Tyreek Key, in a game where Julian Phillips suffered a hip flexor and didn't return for the second half, in a game where Josiah Jordan-James didn't play in this basketball game, Tyreek Key off the bench played valuable minutes and played well for Tennessee. He played well against Vanderbilt as well. Thing about Tyreek Key is, can he be consistent? Because this entire season, he has not been consistent for Tennessee. He's not shot the ball well, and he's not shot enough, to be completely honest. But he's playing Inspire basketball right now. He's playing well, and he was the reason. Tennessee, he was one of the main cogs. He was major key, if you will, Tyreek Key, for allowing Tennessee to battle back, take the lead, take a six-point lead a couple of different times. But give Missouri credit. They just kept, just wouldn't go away, wouldn't go away, wouldn't go away. And then finally, towards the end of the basketball game, Tennessee's up by a couple, right? And Tennessee's up by 3, and there's like 8 seconds left, and Missouri's inbounding it. I'm in the car, and I'm driving to, hashtag date night, right? I'm in the car, and I'm listening, and I'm saying, Carissa, you got a foul here. And she's like, why? And so I took a minute and explained it to her. I'm like, hey, Tennessee's leading by 3. There's like 8 seconds left or whatever. The inbound, they got to go the length of the floor. As soon as they get in, let them take some seconds off, then foul them. Put them at the line because they can only shoot two. They can only shoot 2 free throws when they're trailing by 3. So Tennessee did that. They went over there, yada, yada, did all that good stuff. And ultimately, came down to it where Tennessee was ahead by 2. And there was, Tennessee got 2 free throw opportunities. And Santiago Vespi was at the line. And just like at Vanderbilt, he missed the first one, which is unfortunate. If he would have sunk those, Tennessee would have led by 4, game over, right? So Tennessee's sitting there, and Santi misses the first one. Well, still, if you make the second one, it's a 3-point game. The worst that can happen is a long 3 puts them into overtime, right? Well, lane violation. Ball Missouri. Missouri is trailing by 2 points, okay? Trailing 85-84 by 2 points. And, it's an opportunity. Okay, so my math is wrong. So if they were trailing by 2 points, Tennessee was able to go by 3. Regardless, Tennessee really could have helped itself out a lot right there with Santi at the line. And with Tennessee, no, it's about 3 points, 85-83. Yeah, because it was a 3-pointer. I'm stupid. All right, so Tennessee now ahead by 2 points at 85-83. Missouri has to drive the length of the court in a matter of, what was it, like 4 or 5 seconds or whatever, and puts up a 3, puts up a prayer, does so. They check the monitor. It was good by a long shot. We all watched the game. Just devastating. So Missouri, Tennessee made that comeback. Missouri had to have somebody miss at the line. Santi missed at the line. You got with that lucky with that lane violation to get you the ball right back. You got to go the length of the court in this amount of time, then throw up a prayer. All that happened, all that sunk, all that worked out well for Missouri from then to win. It's unfortunate. It really is. Tennessee shot again, not a bad day at the office offensively, 45%. Tennessee made 12 three-pointers. Tennessee's offense was not really the issue in this basketball game. The defense, again, was 14 made three-pointers. The perimeter defense for Tennessee against Missouri and Vanderbilt the last 2 games has not been great whatsoever. Tyreek Key played out of its mind. Zakai Ziegler getting that dumb foul there at the end, fouling out, was horrible because, again, he had another double-double, 11 points. He had 10 assists, 3 rebounds. But fouling out there at the end was not great. It was not great because you need ball handlers. You need guys that can make free throws and guys who are smart and can play defense at the end of the ball game there. And Sky Ziegler's foul there at the end was stupid. It was. Jonas Adu got the start. I thought Jonas Adu played pretty well. But I'll tell you what, I thought Toby Awaka played really well. 5 points, 7 rebounds, played 16 minutes. Jonas Adu played 20 minutes. I thought Olivier Comwall was not great, to be completely honest. And then poor Vescovi, right? Rick Barnes said after the game, Vescovi's hurting. He's won a lot of games for Tennessee, but he is hurting right now because of his free throw mishaps at the end of Vanderbilt and the end of this game against Missouri. It's not great. Tennessee basketball has really struggled this past two-week stretch. You know, lost at Florida, humiliating fashion, barely got by Auburn, which was a quad one win, so that was important, but barely got by Auburn. Loss at the buzzer against Vanderbilt, losing at the buzzer against Missouri, and you're just better than these teams. So, you know, there's been a lot of Rick Barnes slander here of late, and it's warranted right now. I mean, it is. Certainly I'm not sitting here saying, Rick Barnes should be fired or anything. I'm not saying that because, again, in fact, I have a stat here. Actually, Brent Hutz found this stat, but I wrote it down because I liked it. And again, I'm not just saying, criticism right now is fair, 100% fair. Anybody suggesting Rick Barnes should be fired, again, I think it's so silly. But here's a note that Brent Hutz put on VolQuest.com the other day, and I wrote it down because I thought it was interesting. Since 1989, Tennessee's can't read my own writing here. Okay, since 1989, Tennessee is 330 and 289 in 20 seasons outside of Rick Barnes and Bruce Pearl, with 6 NCAA tournament appearances, 1 by DeVoe, 3 by Jerry Green, and 1 by Konzo Martin. Again, I'll read that again. Since 1989, in 20 seasons, Tennessee is 330 and 289 outside of Rick Barnes and Bruce Pearl. During that stretch, outside of Pearl and Barnes since 1989, Tennessee's made the NCAA tournament 6 times, 1 by DeVoe, 3 by Jerry Green, and 1 by Konzo Martin. With Rick Barnes and Bruce Pearl, Tennessee is 314 and 147 in 14 seasons, with 10 NCAA tournament appearances. This year will be 11 NCAA tournament appearances. And remember, there wasn't an NCAA tournament back in 2020. Now, would Tennessee have made that 2020 tournament? That's up for debate because Tennessee was not fantastic that season, but still. It just goes to show you how good Tennessee's been under those two coaches compared to what Tennessee's been in the last 3 decades. I think the point in that was to say, there is frustration, but like if you're in my demo again, remember when I was a kid, Bruce Pearl was here. It was exciting basketball. My adult life, for the most part, Rick Barnes has been here the last 6-7 years or whatever it's been. So I have lived through 2 really good spurts of Tennessee basketball. And oh yeah, one of those years in between, Konzo Martin got Tennessee to the Sweet 16. I've seen a lot of good Tennessee basketball, but for the bulk of the 90s and early 2000s, there was not good basketball at Tennessee. So it kind of just goes to show you why teams and why fans are still having the back of this program and having the back of Rick Barnes, because they've seen truly what horrible basketball is. Again, I say all that to not say that criticism is not warranted here, because it is. This is a tough stretch right here, and you've got to figure it out. You've got Alabama coming up on Wednesday. You've got Kentucky. You've got to play Auburn again. South Carolina looks like right now the only guaranteed gimme. So tough sledding ahead, but it's been a tough, tough week for the University of Tennessee. There is no doubt about it. Hopefully they can rebound and you can jump up there and play well at home against Alabama. Boy, would that be an amazing win for Tennessee. We'll see about the health status of Julian Phillips. We'll see about the health status of Josiah Jordan James. Right now, Tennessee's just got to get out of its funk right now, losing back-to-back at the buzzer this past week. And critical free throws missed by Santiago Vescovi. You really, really hate that. All right, that's going to do it here for this Monday show. Got a busy week coming up. We'll catch up with Joshua later in the week. We'll answer your mailbag questions. That's coming up tomorrow. Anything you guys want, @_Kaner, @LockedOnVols, Twitter Tuesday right here on the show. You can also fill up the comment section on YouTube. Thank you guys for watching on YouTube, for subscribing to the channel and supporting the show. Thanks so much for listening wherever you find your podcast, making it your first listen each and every day. Let's do it again tomorrow. Same time, same place. This is Locked On Vols.